ubiquitous in this model of massive gravity we heard about this morning and also in the last talk. So in the first part of my talk, I will discuss, will say some words about massive gravity and in general, reviewing some particular models. And then I will turn to discuss some properties of spherically symmetric, static spherically symmetric solution of bigravities that I will call S4, S4 of bigravity. A broad motivation we heard about already is to get rid of dark energy or maybe dark matter by changing the dynamics of gravity. And being in a place called Waterloo, I found appropriate to quote a French hero who personifies, in fact, the success and the failure of both approaches, modifying gravity or adding dark energy. The hero is Le Verrier. So as an old French hero, like Zidane, for example, he had a dark side and a bright side. So the dark side was the discovery of Neptune. The bright side, sorry, and the dark side was the non-discovery of a planet named Vulcan that he conjectured to exist in order to explain the anomalous motion of Mercury. So, well, also I realize that I'm French and I live in a hotel called Waterloo Hotel. So it's, again, very difficult for me in addition to jet lag. Anyway, so I'm going to discuss first some properties of massive gravity. I'm going maybe to repeat something which I've already been said, but I think it's maybe interesting nonetheless to say them in a different way because probably not of everybody is an expert of this subject. So I'm first going to discuss some aspect of Pauli-Fierce theory, then non-linear Pauli-Fierce theory, what can be called non-linear Pauli-Fierce theory, then DGP theory, and last, bigravity. So as we already heard about this morning, Pauli-Fierce theory is the a theory for a massive spin 2, the only Gauss-free theory for a massive spin 2 that is made out of keeping the kinetic term coming from Einstein inert action expanding around some flat background, say, in some perturbation h mu nu, and then adding some mass term which have to be of this form with the coefficient here -1, this one, in order to have no Gauss and tachyon. And so it breaks explicitly gauge invariance. And as we heard about this morning, the propagator in the massless case and in the massive case are discretely different. You have here 1/2 versus 1/3. And this in the massive case, this 1/3 is independent of the mass. So it stays 1/3 if you let m goes to 0. And as a result, you have this celebrated von Damm-Wellman-Sakharov discontinuity that you can see looking, for example, at coupling. Coupling this h nu nu to some conserved t mu nu and looking at the amplitude, exchange amplitude between some other source s mu nu and this t mu nu, you find those two amplitudes in Fourier space in the massless and in massive case, and you see that they are discretely different again. And one possible choice can be to look at non-relativistic source, and in which case you find that the massive amplitude is larger by a factor 4/3 than the massless one, which in itself is not a problem. You just have to rescale Newton constant if you want to get rid of this discrepancy. But then you, the similar discrepancy will reappear in other observables, like line bending, in fact. So this is this so-called von Damm-Wellman-Sakharov discontinuity, that is to say you have no limit from a massive theory towards a massless theory, at least if you stick with linear, with a quadratic theory. And so note that the mass term of Pauli-Fierce theory is written here in terms of decomposition into 3+1 components. And so the peculiarity of this mass term is that it does not, it does depend only linearly on H not not and not quadratically as you could have expected from the beginning. And hence, this H not not is a Lagrange multiplier, a true Lagrange multiplier of the theory, which equation of motion enables to get rid of one of the a priori 6 dynamical degree of freedom. And as a result, you have 5 propagating degree of freedom in the quadratic Pauli-Fierce theory. So far, so good. So what you can do to complexify a bit the game is to go to what can be called non-linear Pauli-Fierce theory. So that is to say you keep this term at linear order into H mu nu, or quadratic order in the action. And you keep now all order in H mu nu in the Einstein-Hilbert action. So, I mean, of course, one can question the consistency of this approach, but let's do that for a moment. And at quadratic order, you see that this action obviously reduces to the Pauli-Fierce action. And you can look at a spherically symmetric solution of this theory. This was done a long time ago by Arkady Weinstein, in fact. And what he found is the following result. First, if you look at the solution in terms of an expansion into the Newton constant, you find here this coefficient, which is 1 in the massless theory, is 1/2. And this is a trace of this Van Damme-Bellman-Sakharov discontinuity that you see in having a leading to wrong light bending. But more interestingly, he noticed, in fact, that in some kind of non-linear Pauli-Fierce, it's not. I believe this theory he looked at is not, in fact, exactly in the family I described, but doesn't matter so much for the argument. He discovered that if you go beyond the first order, you have a next order term which depends on this parameter epsilon, and this parameter epsilon is singular when you let m, the mass of the graviton, goes to zero. And so this introduces a new length scale in the problem that was called R star previously, which I will call RV for Weinstein scale, which is defined as a scale where epsilon is of order 1. And so when you let M to be, in terms of a length of the size of the Hubble radius, you discover that this Weinstein radius is in fact much bigger, as was mentioned previously also, than the solar system size. So what is going on at small distance below this RV? So Weinstein's answer to this question is that, first of all, there exists another perturbative expansion that is defined around ordinary Schwarzschild solution. And you can work out this expansion explicitly and discover that the next two leading terms this time is well-behaved when the mass of the graviton goes to zero. So this suggests that one has at small distance maybe some others, some solution which goes smoothly towards Schwarzschild solution of massless gravity as m goes to zero. However, it was also noticed right after Weinstein's paper by Boulware and Désert that there is, of course, no warranty that this solution really exists and can be matched to the other solution at large distances above RV. Right. So that's a first question one would like to ask and answer. there is another way to look at this VDV discontinuity as being due to the scalar polarization of the graviton being coupled to the trace of the source energy momentum tensor, in fact. And the Weinstein mechanism is understood then as being due to this polarization having strong interaction, as was described previously. This can be encoded into some effective action for this polarization that has this form. So it has this cubic self-interaction with some self-interaction scale lambda here. And as a result, you can show that this, in fact, describes correctly this Weinstein mechanism. However, this theory, non-linear Pauli-Fierce theory, has some pathologies. And one of the pathologies is that it propagates 6 instead of 5 degrees of freedom, with unbounded from below Hamiltonian as well. So this you can understand easily. If you use ADM decomposition now of the metric instead of looking at some fluctuation around some flat space-time, you discover that neither the lapse nor the shift are Lagrange multipliers. So previously, remember that H naught naught was a Lagrange multiplier. Now N is not because it's entering quadratically into this mass term here. And as a result, you don't have this extra constraint you had previously in the linear Pauli-Fierce theory, and you end up having 6 instead of 5 propagating degree of freedom previously. Moreover, you can work out the Hamiltonian by solving the constraint, and you find this Hamiltonian here, which has these pathological terms which are unbounded from below. So this was noticed by Boulware and Désert, and one can argue, although I personally would like to see some better derivation of this, that this can be related to the strong coupling problem. In fact, if you remember this scalar action for the scalar polarization of the graviton that I wrote previously as this form, and you see that it leads to order 4, in fact, equation of motion. And so as a result, it does not describe, in fact, one scalar, but two scalar, and one being ghost-like. So it's very tempting, of course, to identify this extra degree of freedom that appears due to this nonlinearity to this 6 degree of freedom that was discovered by Boulware and Desert, and the fact, and it also, in fact, correspond to the result I showed here that the Hamiltonian is unbounded from below because this extra degree of freedom is ghost-like. And you can also understand actually very well from this action this Weinstein mechanism as being due to, in this particular case, to cancellation of the attraction exerted by this extra scalar polarization, cancellation at small distance by ghost exchange. Okay, so let me now turn to DGP model. So DGP model is a more complicated setting of massive gravity that we already heard about. So I will be fast on this. Just to mention, so it's a brain world model, and it has this tensor structure for the graviton propagator, which is that of a massive graviton. And so it leads as well to the Van Damme and Mann-Sakharov discontinuity on Minkowski background. However, there are evidences that this discontinuity disappear in DGP model. So I think this is irrespective. In fact, one can look at this problem irrespectively of the stability of the DGP model, as well as one can look at this problem for the same reason in the previous theory I just discussed, which is also unstable. And so one has exact cosmological solution in DGP model that Rob mentioned that are interpolating between solutions of massless gravity, 4D general relativity, and solution of 5D general relativity with a brain source. And so those solutions are providing somehow an explicit and I believe the first exact solutions showing a Weinstein mechanism at work in this type of massive gravity, that is to say interpolation between solution of massless and solution of massive gravity. So this comes in support of a Weinstein mechanism at work. It's not a proof at all. And there are another recently found solution by Nemanja showing also the same type of recovery. Also, it's I would argue it's not exactly on the same footing, but this is another story. So that's all for exact solutions, unfortunately. Now there are also perturbative study of Schwarzschild type solution of DGP model that show the same type of recovery. So if you look at the potential for this solution, they interpolate between 4D behavior at distances smaller than RC and 5D behavior at distances larger than RC, while the tensor structure shows this Weinstein radius and is 4D below this Weinstein radius modified for DGP. So this is also related to strong self-interaction in the brain bending sector, as was mentioned. And you can write, in fact, easily the equation which exhibits this self-coupling, which is this, in fact, an exact equation in this case, thanks to this Israel junction condition. So this is just the extrinsic curvature of the brain, and you can derive this equation here. And here you have the nonlinearity responsible for this Weinstein radius appearance. Okay. However, there is an issue that I think deserve better understanding in this game. First of all, cosmological solutions are known to play a tricky role for the VDVC discontinuity. In fact, it's known that there is no VDVC discontinuity on anti-De Sitter and also De Sitter, even though on De Sitter you have unitarity problem for just Pauli-Fierce theory. Moreover, there are also known solutions of bigravity theory with cosmological asymptotics, which are, in fact, arbitrarily close to massless Schwarzschild. In fact, they are exactly ADS or DS Schwarzschild solution. And those solutions I'm going to present in part two. So another issue is that as far as static spherically symmetric solutions are concerned, the result I talked about were obtained perturbatively or in some approximation scheme. And surprises can arise when one tries to find exact solutions. So that was done by Damour and Kogan and Tatazoglu in the framework of massive gravity. And also, so this work was numeric, and this work of Gregory and Alberto Iglesias for DGP gravity was analytic. And they obtained an exact solution on the brain, but were not able to explicitly find the solution in the bulk, I believe, and found, in this case, differences with the linearized solution that were from previously. So I think there is a need for better understanding this issue. In particular, what is exactly the validity of the linear perturbation theory? And so this has some flavor of what is called linearization instability in general relativity. That is to say, the question of whether you can extend a given solution of the linearized theory into some exact solution of the nonlinear theory. And there also a need to better understand theories where the Weinstein mechanism works versus those where it does not work. And so I think this provides some motivation to better understand, in fact, static spherically symmetric solutions of this type of theory, and in particular, maybe the simpler one, which is bigravity, I'm going to discuss now. So what is bigravity? Bigravity is a theory with, as its name indicates, which has two metrics. So it was introduced, I believe, in this form in the 70s by Salam and Strasdi. At the time, it was introduced to deal with strong interactions. So it's sometimes called, I think, FG gravity or F strong gravity. And so it has two Einstein-Hilbert actions. And then it has a coupling between the two metrics, which you can choose a priori with some arbitrariness. And one possible choice is this one, which has a good property that it leads to a theory which is invariant under common diffeomorphism. And also, if you freeze one of the two metrics, let's say you freeze G, no, F, then this theory reduces to linear Pauli Fierce to non-linear Pauli Fierce theory that I presented before with the correct mass term. If you let F be dynamical, you find and look at perturbation around some Minkowski spacetime, you find that you have one massless and one massive graviton in the spectrum with 5 + 2 degree of freedom, and hence this theory is a toy model, if you want, or it is a way to investigate various properties of massive gravity. There are other motivations to look at this theory. First, if you look at the equation of motion, you find out that this interaction term here appears as some kind of extra matter component, if you want. So it was advocated by Thibault Damour, Jan Kogan, and Antonio Spatazoglou as providing a new type of quintessence. And also, some of the solutions of this theory breaks spontaneously, in fact, Lorentz invariance, and give Lorentz violating mass term to the graviton in a similar way to what happened in some other models, like ghost condensate or half massive gravity, as I will show after. So here, I don't want to push the idea that it is a realistic theory for various reasons. One of them is related, in fact, to this Boulware desert type of instability, even though, for example, in the paper of Thibault and Kogan and company, they argue that it might not be necessarily a problem. And there are other reasons to worry that will be discussed thereafter. But my point of view is that I think it's an interesting theory to look at to better understand this issue about the VD-VD discontinuity and its possible disappearance a la Weinstein. So, starting with this action, one can look at static spherically symmetric solutions. This has been done already by Salam and Strasdi. And here is a general ansatz you can make. So it depends on six unknown functions. And notice that you cannot diagonalize in general at the same time the two metrics because you have only one common diffeomorphism and not two. So this is the most general ansatz you can write. And one can classify the solutions in two families. One are called type 1 solution, where B is equal to 2/3 of R squared. And the other one are type 2 solution, where D is 0. And so in this case, in this type 2 case, both metrics are diagonal. So let's talk a bit about type 2 solutions. In fact, in this case, which looks a priori simpler than the previous one, than the type 1, the general solution is not known analytically. You can find asymptotic form of the metric when you assume that, for example, that G mu nu is flat, and so G mu nu was this on that here, this metric here. So let's assume it's flat and non-dynamical. You can find then exact, you can find, sorry, asymptotics of the metric and find that this asymptotics is of Yukawa type, so as you would have expected somehow. And you can also, with the same assumption, look at numerical solutions, trying to integrate in, or in fact out, the F metric, the solution for the F metric. This was done by Thibault and his collaborator. And what they found, very interestingly, is that they found that these solutions are singular, and they develop singularities at finite radius, which are not protected by horizon. So, so notice that, so from that perspective, you can say, in fact, that the Weinstein mechanism is not working for nonlinear polyspheres theory, because you don't have a solution which would interpolate a solution which is non-singular and which would interpolate between a large distance massive behavior, quote unquote, and a small distance massless behavior. So, so that's a bit surprising somehow. It's like quantum unification theory. It was invented for a theory in which it doesn't work somehow. So this Weinstein mechanism was invented in this framework, but it seems it doesn't work in this framework somehow. So you can also now let G be dynamical, and you can find exact solutions as well. Well, in this case, you can find exact solutions, sorry, analytic solution. But again, those solutions are in fact boring as far as massive gravity is concerned, because they are solutions of massless gravity in which both metrics are proportional. And again, you don't have any Yukawa asymptotics. So, so far, there is no known type 2 solution which have the Yukawa asymptotic and which shows this Weinstein mechanism at work. So let's go to the other class of solution, type 1 solution. Type 1 solution are known analytically, and they have this form here. So they depend on two functions, P and Q. And you can, in fact, easily recognize that those solutions are exact solutions of massless gravity. So they are in the Schwarzschild ADS family. And the first one is, it's obvious that the first one is. The second one, you just have to figure out some coordinate change, which is some kind of Eddington-Finkelstein coordinate change, in order to put it in the usual static form. But those are solutions of massless gravity. So again, you don't find any sign of the VDVZ discontinuity and any Yukawa behavior. So notice that in this solution, the curvature, the cosmological constant, or rather the curvature, the De-Sitter or anti-De-Sitter curvature, is in fact depending on some integration constant, beta, not only on the parameter of the action, rho f and rho g, and this zeta, but also on some integration constant beta. And so it's similar in some sense to unimodular gravity, where the cosmological constant appears as some integration constant. This is just a side remark. So let's now concentrate on those solutions. And I would like to show that those solutions are, in fact, pathological. And although they might have some virtue, phenomenologically speaking, and also in, also maybe theoretically speaking, related to this issue of linearization instability. So let's look at the first simplest case, which is one metric is Minkowski, and the other one is De-Sitter. So G metric is just you know, canonical Minkowski, and the other one is De-Sitter, but written in some coordinate, which has the Minkowski coordinate, and those coordinates, as you see, go through the De-Sitter horizon. And so they are, in fact, Eddington-Finkelstein type of coordinate for the De-Sitter metric. And so as a result, you can easily draw the Carter-Penrose diagrams of this solution. So you have here Minkowski, and here you have one half of De-Sitter. And you see that here we have drawn the null radial geodesics of Minkowski on this De-Sitter part. And you see the very strange thing that this bends up, right, this path-directed null geodesics of Minkowski bends up into De-Sitter diagram. So obviously, the two metrics do not share the same light cone. And in fact, the horizon of this part of the horizon of De-Sitter is mapped into the past time-like infinity of the Minkowski. So that you can see here, because if you follow if you follow R equal constant curve in Minkowski, this two dashed gray line with this one of two arrows, you end up either here or here. And if you now stay on the R equal RH curve, you end up here. And so you can, in fact, approach any point along this half horizon by not following exactly R equal constant curve, but slightly deviating from them in the past infinity. So it's a very weird structure. And you can have even more fun looking at De Sitter with Schwarzschild metric, which is also an exact solution of the theory. So here is how the metric looks like. And here is how the mapping of the two space-time are related. So you have here the Schwarzschild horizon, which is this sphere here. And you, if you follow this these dashed arrows here, you end up either here or here in Schwarzschild. And if you follow now this null geodesics of De Sitter, you end up in this I minus point here. So in this case, you have a weird mapping again. This I minus of Schwarzschild is mapped into this half De Sitter part, while this part of the Schwarzschild horizon is mapped into the I plus here. So one can ask at this point, in fact, what's going on if you cross the horizon, right? Because, of course, you can extend De Sitter beyond the horizon here and Schwarzschild beyond the horizon here. But the problem is that, and so if you do that, you can build up some geometric extension by adding some extra copy, for example, of an extra Minkowski spacetime to go to this region and glue those two Minkowski spacetime along their time-like infinity here and here. That's a possibility. But first of all, this extension is not unique. Well, that's not necessarily a problem. It's happened also in GR. And you don't have global hypervolicity, as you can see here also. Because if you cut that by some possible Cauchy surface of De Sitter, you end up cutting twice some future directed null geodesic of Minkowski, for example. But that's also something which happened in GR. But more problematically, this extension is not, in some obvious way, a solution of the equation of motion, because you have to go through the infinity of Minkowski to go through this horizon here. And in fact, it seems that there is no change of coordinates that is such that the metric would be non-singular everywhere. So possible solution to this extension puzzle, if there is any solution, might be that, in fact, this horizon, if you look at it from the point of view of the Minkowski spacetime, the geodesics of Minkowski spacetime, it looks very much like some kind of Cauchy horizon. And so it might be unstable. But this is sometimes something we did not really study in detail. So there is one possible interest, though, about this weird causal structure, is that if you follow this red geodesics of Minkowski, you can go out this blue region here. And so it relates to some similar situation which has been discussed by Slava and Alexander in this room recently, I believe, for black holes in K-sense type of theory. So there is another pathology of now beta different of one solution, which have also not been solved, which is that for generic beta, this d function here is becoming complex at some radius r. So of course, you can extend this spacetime beyond this point, because this is just De Sitter spacetime. But if you do that, now you end up with something you cannot extend in the Minkowski part. So this is also pathology. So to try to give a more positive account on this theory, we can look at another interesting type 1 solution, which is one where you have two Minkowski spacetime, but one they are not both canonical. You see that you have 2/3 beta coefficient in terms of the dt square in this metric, and so as a result they don't share the same Lorentz symmetry. And so if you look at, so this provides some spontaneous breaking of Lorentz symmetry in this theory. And so if you look at perturbation around this solution, you obtain this mass term for the graviton, which is a bit ugly, but what I want to stress is that it has similar mass term have been studied by Valery Rubakov and Sergei Dubovsky. And its peculiarity is that it does not contain not I components. And so you can show, sorry, that you have a no propagating scalar and vector, but only tensor propagation. And coupling this theory to matter, you can address the issue of VDVZ discontinuity, and that's what you get for the gauge invariant potential. I will come back on this formula just in now. So the first part shows, so the mass of the graviton is in this second part here. So if you let the mass of the graviton goes to zero, you are left with this first part, and this is a massless result. So you, as a result, you don't have a VDVZ discontinuity, but this interaction term, which is similar to what was also discussed by Gregory and Luca Grisa in so-called half-massive gravity, gives a priori correction to the result of massless gravity, right? And the one puzzle is that those corrections are not seen in any of the known exact solutions, because the known exact solution I showed you are exact solution of massless gravity. So this again brings to the question of whether this theory has some kind of linearization instability, or whether there are other solutions beyond the one I showed that are such that you can mean that those solutions would be, when linearized, would give this the phi given by this equation. So to conclude, part two. I showed that this known static spherically symmetric solution of back gravity have a weird causal structure and also are geodesically incomplete. So this is some kind of new pathology, I believe, of this solution, and also you can argue maybe of the theory. It's not clear whether there is, in fact, a Weinstein recovery of the VDVZ discontinuity in this theory, because so far all the attempts have failed to find such a recovery in exact solutions. Although some of those solutions provide interesting framework to spontaneously break Lorentz invariants. And one open question is also this, is there any linearization instability in this theory? And this also is a question which can be addressed in DGP model as well. Thank you for your attention.
So this is very confusing. I mean, if you have two sort of metrics, and they say some other couples to the one metric,
right,
that goes through this sort of the coupling to the other metric, you have two causality, right?
Right.
And so this you can easily construct the closed hybrid curve.
Well, in fact, in this case, we've studied the closed hybrid curve. I don't have time to talk about that, but you can show that you cannot in this case, because you always have two light cones, but one is always outside the other, and you have a well-defined global time coordinates which goes along. So we studied this question, but
you didn't find any sort of close
hybrid. Yeah, right. Yeah.
Oh.
More questions? I just want so Justin and Stefan and Via, they have this recovery or non-recovery of Weinstein because of pi language. How this?
I don't know. You mean which recovery exactly?
Did you guys think this Weinstein recovery in terms of the pi's in the massive gravity?
The Weinstein?
No. In the Weinstein scale.
Yes.
Discussion. In the pi range, in the pi Lagrange.
Yes.
So you did that, right?
But
yeah,
What?
Yeah.
In the decoupling.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah,
it shows. But is it
the same?
The some power,
yeah. It's the same as you know, this effective action for scalar field dimension, no?
Right.
So So that it is this action, right?
Yes.
So of course, yeah, there is some arguments saying that, but what I find puzzling is that if you look at the exact solution, again, you don't find an exact solution which shows this metadata, right, which are known solutions. This is the result of Thibault and company. So this might be related to the instability of the theory, but it might be also related to some other things which we don't understand that this continuity. So I think it's worth to try to find an exact solution which would show this this recovery. Right?
Any more questions? Okay, sorry.
In biometric theories, there's an ambiguity on how to raise and lower indices.
Right.
And so I give you a contravariant or a covariant object.
Yeah.
Is there an ambiguous way to manipulate it?
I don't think there is an ambiguous way. There is some arbitrariness in this theory. Yeah, there is also arbitrariness in if you want to, you know, to promote them as some realistic theory on how you couple to matter, right? Because you have two metrics, so you can couple to one metric, to the other, or to some combinations, and so it's not, you have a lot of freedom. Yeah, that's what I said. I don't want to put the idea that this is a realistic theory. I just view it as some interesting toy model to study this issue of religious discontinuity in particular. Although some people have argued that it might be very similar.
Okay, any more questions?
Yes, I thought that's